Welcome back to Turning Hard Times to Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor, and I'm really pleased to have with me once again Dr. Quentin Henning. He's here today to give us an update on Irving Resources. Quentin is, of course, a member of the Crescat Capital Management Team, and he is a director, and he serves Crescat as the firm's geologic and technical advisor. And, of course, those of you who are interested in exploration stocks, as I am, one thing you might want to keep in mind is watch the Crescat Gets Active videos in which they talk macroeconomics, and then Quentin comes on and gives a lay term. He talks about the exploration possibilities and possibilities for various companies that he really loves and Crescat owns based on, you know, he explains it, the geological issues in lay terms so you can understand it. And it's really highly recommended. I recommend it highly. And whenever I can, I watch it or I go back and listen to it and watch it later. But it really, they update investors on some very exciting stories, and one of which is Irving Resources, which I think he's going to talk about perhaps sometime in the future on the Crescat Gets Active videos. But in any event, he's here today to help us understand something about Irving Resources. Thanks, Quentin, for joining me once again.
Thank you, Jay. Always a pleasure.
It's really good to have you with us. I should perhaps just, again, run over the basics. Trades in Canada under IRV, IRVRF in the States, so you can buy it down here, as I have. Newmont and Sumitomo are major shareholders. Only 61.9 million shares out, 63 cents. So it has a very low market cap. It would be around 39 million U.S. dollars, something like that. Now, Irving has a very unique strategy to explore for and mine high-grade gold and silver hosted in high silica veins in Japan. And a couple of factors that makes this business model so attractive are, for one, the value of the silica host rock is of value, and Irving will have the copper smelters recover the gold and silver from the material and also pay for the silica rock. So, you know, most mining companies, most mining projects, you don't get anything for the host rock. It's just waste material, but not in this case. Also, it means that Irving won't have to build a mine, build a mill, I should say, because, of course, that's one of the large capital costs when you have to build a mining operation. And the absence of considerable costs. So it's just a business model that seems to make an awful lot more sense, and it's a business model that others have used in Japan. So with that said, thank you again, Quentin, for being with us. And I'd like you to talk about perhaps I think the last time you were on with us was September 27th, and since then there was a very significant news announcement from Irving back on November 11th of multiple high-grade gold and silver veins in a historic mine site, underneath a historic mine site. I believe it was a sort of a blind discovery. Could you talk about that? And I would try to pronounce the name of the project, but I have a hard time doing so.
No worries. Hokuryu, yes, Jay.
Hokuryu. Or something like that. And anyway, I butchered it. I try.
That's all right. It took me about a year or two before I could pronounce it. But it's, Hokuryu, which is a historic mine. And there it has been a long tradition of gold mining in Japan. A lot of people don't recognize Japan as a major gold jurisdiction, but it's part of the Circumpacific, the Ring of Fire. And it, just like anywhere else along the Ring of Fire, it has a lot of volcanoes, volcanic activity that have given rise to a lot of hot spring deposits. These hot spring deposits, you know, are basically produced when magmas reach shallow levels within the crust, and the heat and the actual metal that comes with these comes off of those magmas. And then it, you know, it dissolves in the fluids. It's carried to surface where it's actually precipitated in the near surface environment. So places like Yellowstone, for example, underneath those hot spring pools that people see while they're driving around the park, probably 200 or 300 meters, 400, 500 meters even, there's high grade veins forming right now, believe it or not. But lots of these things around the Pacific Rim, and Japan here in Hokkaido, which is the northern island in Japan, has a large number of volcanic fields, long history of volcanism. And we are exploring a little area called Omu, which is up in the northern part of Hokkaido. It's near the northern tip or terminus of the island. And we have three now discoveries. This Hokuryu mine that we've now drilled under and confirmed high-grade veins at depth. This is our third discovery on the property. It really does look like we have a district-scale epithermal vein play here.
Mm-hmm. Are all three of those part of the same system, Quentin, do you think?
They're all very closely related. The timing of the volcanism, the timing of the magmas that drove them, all very, very close in time, probably within a few hundred thousand years. They're not exactly the same system, but you know they're separated by, you know, 4 or 5 up to 6 or 8 kilometers apart. But they are all definitely part of the overall magmatic process that occurred here.
You know, as I look at the some of the assays that came through that November 11th news release, I see some pretty skinny veins. Very high values, but very skinny veins. For example, one that grades 8.98 grams per ton gold equivalent, but it's over 0.41 meters. And there's others similar to that. Very high grade. And normally, how many times would you see mines in which, unless you have a lot of little skinny veins right next to each other, you would just sort of say, well, I can't mine that. It's too narrow. But in this case, because of what I was pointing out, the silica host rock is a value. Does that come into play?
That's exactly right. Look, there's several things that factor into these types of deposits that really will ultimately play into the economics. And by the way, just so you know, virtually all of the gold veins mined in Japan have been used for smelter flux. Like, that is a long-standing tradition in the country. There's a lot of base metal smelters, copper, you know, lead, zinc smelters around the country that to this day are some of the biggest in the world, produce a lot of the base metals that we need, and they need the silica flux. Okay, so there's a long-standing tradition of mining gold in this way. So there's two ways, there are two factors that play into this. One is the silica content. You basically need a certain level of silica content in the material you mine, so that it does, you know, meet the qualifications, constitutes smelter flux. Mm-hmm. And the wall rock oftentimes is silicified. So even though these appear to be skinny intercepts, they in theory could be high enough silica that you can mine the entire thing over, you know, an acceptable width, say, you know, narrow vein mine 1.8 or something like that, and it still deliver a product that's suitable for smelters. So there's one way to look at it. The other way, and a lot of people don't know much about this, but there is a photograph on our deck, in our deck on our website, at Hishikari, which is really the only significant gold mine operating in Japan right now. There is a lot of sorting that's done to make sure to upgrade the material for smelter flux. So what they do is they mine the rock underground, they bring it to surface, and then they screen it. They take the rock, they put it through a light crusher that breaks it down, and they screen it. And anything that's over 3 inches, they actually have people who are they're sitting there sorting by hand as the rock goes down a conveyor belt. Then the material that's sieved to between 3 inches and 1/2 inch goes across an optical sorter. And then the stuff that's finer than 1/2 inch goes through the lowest screen deck and goes directly in the bulk of bags to ship to the smelter. So you know, people say, oh my goodness, these are a bit skinny veins. These are actually pretty typical of epithermal veins that are being mined at places like Hishikari. So I think that what you got to appreciate is that these veins are well below the historic mine workings here. This mine, Hokuryu, shut down in the Second World War, but it did produce a considerable amount of gold. It produced somewhere around 100,000 ounces of gold and around 1 million ounces of silver, something like that, right before the Second World War, and then it was shut down. But, you know, this tells us we have a lot more below the existing mine to chase further.
Are you expecting some more? Are there some more assays coming from last year's drill program?
We have drilled a couple more holes at Hokuryu, so yeah, there's probably some more assays. that will be coming sometime next year. But more importantly, we have been focused here in the past 6 months about getting our drill program ramped up.
Right.
We moved in. We bought a drill in mid last year and moved it into country. And our plan was to use Canadian drillers, actually, to start drilling in earnest with that drill and this other drill that we have on site. So two rigs. There was a lot of challenge getting drillers in place. So we weren't able to actually pursue that as aggressively as we'd hoped late this year. But we have found a solution here. Okay, so we have identified ability to get drillers out of South America, believe it or not.
Oh.
And we've actually got visas for them, and they're going to be arriving in Japan early in 2023, in mid-January 2023. And we will be able to, we'll certainly be able to start one rig and probably the second rig soon after. So we can accelerate drilling much quicker than we've done over the past few years during COVID. This is what needs to happen. We have lots of work to do at Omui, which is our biggest discovery on the Omui project. We have a lot of follow-up at Omui Center and now at Hokuriu. Now we also have a new target, Mariama, that we plan mm-hmm. to test. This year, we do have a pretty aggressive drill program laid out for this year. And as long as we can get these drillers in, you know, it's just about labor in Japan, really. As long as we can get drillers in place, these drillers out of Chile, then we should be in much, much better shape to accelerate our drill program.
Yeah. I guess one of the problems was the COVID restrictions and the inability to get people from outside the country into the country to do this work, right?
It has been. It's been a real challenge. The visa processing has been very, very slow at times, even until recently. But it's even that's really accelerated here lately. We thought it would take perhaps 8 weeks to get these visas for the Chilean drillers, and we've actually managed to get them in a couple of weeks. So we've already got them in hand, and those guys should be ready to come to Japan early next year.
Well, you've got your hands full then with just Omu. You have some other properties as well down in the southern end of the island. Some pretty exciting stories, but I guess we're going to have to wait probably a little longer for those.
We actually have work going on. This is Yamagata, which is down
in Yamagata, right.
Yeah, southern part of the country on Kyushu, which is the southernmost island of the chain. And Yamagata is the closest project to the Hishikari mine. Hishikari is a very famous gold mine. It's the one I mentioned earlier that's operating.
Yes.
And it produces a considerable amount of gold a year, probably about 250,000 ounces. Hardly anybody knows about it because it's a very, we'll call it off-the-radar mining operation in the mining space. But it is a fantastic mine. It's been making a lot of money. Their cash costs are probably less than $400 U.S.
Wow.
It's insane how cheaply they produce gold there. So we've got the Yamagata project. It's about 11 kilometers from Hishikari. Very much like we just talked about for Omu, it's basically in the same setting. It's related to the same magmatic event that occurred down in that location. And we think that based on the geophysics and other geologic indications we have, we think it's a very close analog for Hishikari. And we are doing work there. Okay, so we got our CSAMT crew in around September, I believe, this year, and they're getting close to having the entire CSAMT program wrapped up. We also have some other data we collected, like magnetics and gravity and so forth, and we should be in a position to drill that as well in 2023. So I guess we're really looking to gear things up this year.
Well, I have to say that with the likes of Newmont and Sumitomo being shareholders, these are not companies that would be piddling around with something small. They must see the potential, and I'm sure you do too, because you don't get involved with projects unless they have world-class size, scale to them.
That's precisely right, yeah.
And so, so far we haven't seen a lot. It seems to have been taking a lot longer than I had hoped when I started investing in putting it in my newsletter, but that's kind of the way things go in the mining industry, isn't it? In the mining exploration business, it's never easy, but boy, there sure are some great upsides here. I think Irving is pretty well financed now, right?
It is. We have around circa 10 million Canadian in the bank, and that a lot of that came from the finance that came from Newmont and Sumitomo Corporation here recently. We have plenty of money to operate and undertake this aggressive program next year.
So I guess we just have to keep our eyes open for assays and drill results, and I guess will the company be putting out something about 2023's drill program?
We will. We'll, once we have assurance that we can get these drillers in place, we're going to put out a news release that kind of outlines the entire drill program. The other thing we're doing is we are presenting up at the Roundup Conference in Vancouver, and we will have a core from recent drilling that we've done, both at Hukuria and we at site there. We always get a really good attendance. So if anybody comes by that show, please stop by and see us.
Yeah, the Roundup is usually a good one and more professional, technically inclined people that go there, I believe. And so hopefully you'll get some smart people on it with a lot of dough in their pockets to jump in on this story. But now's the time, folks, at its current price, because if we get a real good bull market in gold and silver here, which maybe it's starting, there may not be all the time you think there is to jump in on some of these. So anyway, Quentin, thank you so much for joining us today. Always a pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you, Jay.